Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming out. Welcome. My name is Dubs Weinblatt. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. And I am so excited to be here for our seventh season of the Thank You for Coming Out podcast. In 2015, I founded the queer improv show, Thank You for Coming Out, or TIFCO as we call it. And it was one of the longest running queer improv shows in New York City. In 2018, our beloved improv show became the podcast it is today, hosted and produced by Gay City News. It is an honor and a privilege to hold space for the coming out and coming into self stories our guests share. And I'm so super excited about my guest here with me today. Pianist Eric Scott Reed, he, him, has been a vital figure on the music scene for over 25 years. His musical journey began on Philadelphia's church scene, continued through formal training at South Philly Settlement Music School, and expanded in Los Angeles and New York, where he established himself among jazz greats. Known for his versatility, Reed has led numerous ensembles, performed solo, composed, produced, and educated aspiring musicians. He has collaborated with legends such as Freddie Hubbard, Joe Henderson, Buster Williams, and Wynton Marsalis. Including his latest release, Black, Brown, and Beige, Reed has an extensive discography of 27 recordings as a leader that highlight his innovative interpretations and original compositions. As an educator, he has influenced many young talents at prestigious institutions. Recently returning to Los Angeles, Reed balances performing, mentoring, and exploring his spiritual and artistic evolution. His work remains a testament to his dedication to jazz and his continuous search for creative expression. Eric, welcome.
Thank you so much, Dubs. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Just so for everyone listening, this is like months in the making. We've had interviews and then there's sickness and internet issues and all this, but here we are. And it's a miracle that we're together right now. I love it.
I'm glad to be here.
Me too. How's LA treating you?
Oh, well, we're already getting into some heavy stuff.
Oh, I didn't mean for it to be.
Yeah, no, the past couple of days with my partner has been a very intense barrage of conversations about how we feel about the city that we love so very, very much, but not quite sure it loves us back in the same way that we love it. You know, LA is a great place to be. If you love beaches and palm trees and nature and hiking and sightseeing, which we all love, but we're starting to feel as though in terms of our artistic engagement, energy-wise, we're exploring some other possibilities, some other places. And I'm not trying to imply that there's something innately wrong with Los Angeles. That would be improper. That would be incorrect. It's just a matter of where you feel most comfortable. Mm-hmm. Being in the space, in the places, in the environment, in the culture that resonates with you. And we were both so in love with Los Angeles. When he came to Los Angeles, he was just excited about this life that he was going to embark upon, that he dreamed about. When I moved back from Tennessee to move back to Los Angeles to be with him, we had these really big ideas and big plans. And then, you know, life says, well, okay, that's cute. The universe says those are wonderful ideas, but those may not happen here, not in the way that you want them to. So the weather has been gray. It's been cold, unseasonably. We've got that marine layer thing going on. And LA has had a rough year. You know, we started off, well, the entire country, the entire world started off the way it started off. Mm-hmm. And then right at the end of January, we had these awful fires.
Yeah.
So that was a real downer for so many of us out here So I think we're trying to emerge from the cloud of that. But the problem is it's still very cloudy, literally. So I'm in a very funky place now where I'm like, oh gosh, come on, LA. I'm trying. I'm giving you everything and you're not really giving it back. That's not really giving. So to answer your question, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's important to go where you resonate, like where you're, and just all the parts of life feel like you're in sync with the place where you live.
Yeah.
And, you can like a city a lot, and it just might not be your city to live in.
100%.
I'm in Columbus, Ohio right now with my parents. I live in New York City, and the vibes between the two are so different. And it just depends on what I'm, if I, if I'm in the mindset of I want to settle down and, live this quiet life, Columbus is perfect for that. But I'm not quite ready for that. I'm like still in the love living in New York City and all the, which I know you've lived there and has inspired your music, which we'll get to. But yeah, it's important for your soul to feel settled. And if it's not feeling settled, then I'm glad that you all are communicating on, well, what could be next? What could work?
Indeed. Indeed, those are ongoing conversations, and they have an impact on the relationship dynamic itself because we go through these periods of discontent and dissatisfaction and these bursts of energy. Like, oh yeah, okay, great, but then it's just this it's this violent wave. So it's time for us to really be having even more serious conversations about what the next couple of years for us are going to look like.
Well, wishing you a lot of luck in those
Thank you.
conversations.
Thank you so much. We're
You're
having
welcome.
them, and that's the important thing.
For sure. That is exactly right. Yeah. The communication is just even communicating in general, I think a lot of partnerships lack. So glad that you're doing that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, all right. So we all have multiple coming out stories. We have multiple coming into self stories. And I would love to hold space for you to share one or more of those stories with us here today.
Oh well, gosh, it's one of those terms. The idea of coming out is a term that I constantly grapple with because I'm always trying to find a more authentic and organic way of expressing who we are and how we feel. And I think I've been, out since I was five. I was outed by an experience by my mother catching me literally in a closet with, I was 5 years old and another little boy 5 years old. And we were in there naked and doing the things. And she caught us, and it was one of the worst beatings I ever got in my entire life. Largely out of fear. Grew up in a very evangelical family, and the black community, unfortunately, is extremely homophobic. So you combine that with religion, it's a nightmare. But I guess the most significant coming out story was the one with my mom. It wasn't the way I wanted to tell her, but she was really provoking me. Like we were sitting in the middle of Farmer John's, it's a restaurant. And I had started, painting my nails and just, started just expressing all these different things here and there without being explicit and saying, hey, I'm, and I forgot what conversation. Oh, we were having a conversation about religion, Christianity, and Donald Trump since 2016, all that's been going on. I've been asking her these questions. Well, why do you believe this? And why is the church doing this? Why is the church supporting him? And all these different kinds of things. And she was fighting for her life trying to defend Christianity because that's all she's ever known. So I get it. No, no shade, girl. But she finally said to me, well, what do you believe? Because I was basically saying, I don't know that I believe any of this stuff that you and dad, my father was a preacher. So I don't know that I believe any of this stuff that you and dad taught me anymore. I don't, all these ancient writings that have been mistranslated and misinterpreted and made up and all this kind of stuff. And so she's now really getting scared. She said, well, what do you believe? What do you call yourself? You don't call yourself a Christian. I said, I consider myself an agnostic theist. And of course, she was like, what? What are you talking about? No idea what those terms even meant. And she finally said, well, why do you paint your nails? As if she didn't know, but she wanted me to say it out loud. I said, what do you want me to say, Ma? I'm queer, okay? And that's how it blurted out. And she started crying, and she was praying. And so it really was not a very pleasant experience at all. And our relationship, which prior to that had been extremely inordinately close, as it tends to be with mothers and their gay sons, especially if you're the youngest, was now stifled. And for the following 6 months, we were having very restrained conversations and how are you? And I was living in Tennessee at the time, and she's living in California. And I'm fine. I'm okay. All right. Yeah, the weather's nice. Just very, very, very awkward conversations. Finally, in December, I come out to visit for Christmas, and I was cleaning out her garage, which, of course, that's what you do. You clean your mother's garage because that's what you do. And she walks up to me, and she's got this envelope. She was always making notes on stuff, whether it's legal size pads or little scraps of paper, and she walks up to me and she says, are you on perp? And I look and I said, first of all, you're in my business. Secondly, it's called prep. Oh God. And we had a really good laugh, and that was the icebreaker. That was the apology, the forgiveness, all without saying those words. Without saying it, she was saying, I'm concerned about you. I still love you. You're my son. And I accept you. I don't understand what this is you are, but I love you. And that's all that matters. So after, very quickly correcting her on what prep was, I said, well, do you think I should be on prep? She said, well, I don't know. You're the one out in these streets. I said, out in the streets? I said, Mama, I'm not a prostitute. I'm a hoe, but I'm not a prostitute. And we had another good laugh about that. And, all those 6 months, what my mother had been doing, and this is the beautiful end of this particular chapter of the story, she had been doing research and watching documentaries and reading up on the lives of queer people and the things, the challenges they face and the dangers and reading up on the AIDS epidemic and all this kind of stuff. And she was just like just educating herself as best as she possibly could on what I might be dealing with because we weren't in conversation. We weren't really in con we didn't go no contact completely, but it was again very stifled. So at her big age of 80 and change, she started doing the work. And that blew
Wow.
my mind. That blew my mind. Because again, the black community is intensely homophobic. And then you combine that with evangelicism, it's just a powder keg. It's a nightmare where you never feel safe. You never feel safe in your home. You don't feel safe with your family. You don't feel safe in the church. So where are the safe spaces? And I wasn't in a place where I was trying to live openly and authentically. I figured I would just continue to repress my sexuality. And because I also wanted to be a Christian, I just needed to be celibate. And that was my life all through my 40s. And by 50, I'd said I'd had enough.
Thank you for sharing. That is a journey for everybody involved. I just think it's so special that your mom just did the work without even having to be asked to do the work. I know for so many folks, myself included, I've had to really ask family members and folks to be like, I need you to know what I'm talking about. I need you to do the research, do the work. And it's really beautiful that she was doing that work. And also calling it purpose really funny.
I was like, because the thing is, and it's such a weird kind of twisted dog whistle, because people say, oh well, allegedly he's gay, or I have always suspected, and I have to constantly correct people. No, you don't suspect queers of being guilty. You suspect of guilty behavior. That's what you're suspicious of. There's nothing guilty or nothing wrong with being queer. So don't use the words I suspect or I have always been suspicious. You say I have always thought, or I've always even speculated, I've always considered or wondered. But don't use a word like suspected, because that is innately and automatically negative. It implies that there's something wrong. And I spend a good deal of time in educating of the people in my circle, but not in a preachy way. I just in little pieces here and there, I say, well, this is what's going on here, and this is this, and no, there is no man or woman in the relationship. We're both men in the relationship. And when I kind of came out in little chapters or little pieces here and there to each of my family members. There was never an official coming out date, or where and a lot of I know a lot of queer people experienced that, but I knew for me I was going to have individual conversations and explain it to different people different ways, because there's my mother, there's my siblings, there are my nieces and nephews, there are my great nieces and nephews, there are my great great nieces and nephews, there's my friends. Every single person, it was going to resonate with them a certain way. So I knew with certain people, I could just all of a sudden just start talking about it out of the blue. And they'd go, oh, okay. I was kind of waiting for this moment, to affirm you. But the people that love you have always seen you and have never taken it to the street. They've never taken it to another person. They've always just seen you. And then decided that they were going to be there for you when you came their way. And then you have the other people who have seen behaviors, or they've watched how you've used your hands, or the clothes you wore, or the bass or lack of bass in your voice, or how long you or how pronounced your S's are, And then they've seen something different, and then they've made judgments. Those are the people that I've managed to be able to avoid and keep at bay and establish my boundaries. So people have always seen me, but there have always been different responses as to what they see.
And just as you're explaining all of this, there's so much, and this is a theme that's been coming up a lot this season of just like navigation around, this is how I'm going to tell this person, and this person's going to react differently, so I'm going to tell them in a different way, and you holding the space for them while they process their own things. And it's just there's a lot of navigating that has to happen as a queer person to to invite in and keep folks in, it's a lot of work.
It really truly is. And I love these people so much. And I'm not talking about just my family. I mean just my church folks who we've all been taught or brainwashed or indoctrinated with the same poison, with the same toxic dogma. We've all been taught that same thing. So now having to go back and say, listen, this is who I am, church auntie. Where do you stand with this? Do you still love me, or are you kind of quietly and in the back of your mind thinking, well, he's going to hell. What's going on? I need to know. I need to know if you are a safe space, if you are a person that I can trust, to be there and to just love me. Or if you hear somebody say something sideways about me, are you going to defend me?
Yeah. Well, hopefully the answer is yes.
And well, even if it isn't, it would break my heart because, like I said, these are people that I love dearly. But I also understand how centuries of entrenched beliefs and white supremacy and homophobia, I can understand how that can just have you in a chokehold. And if you don't know anything else and you aren't encouraged to explore or research anything else, this is just where you are. I can almost not blame them because once you start playing Jenga with people's faith, people aren't ready for that. The average person is just not ready to hear that the word homosexual only appeared in the Bible in like 1946. They're not ready for that conversation. They're not ready for that truth. They're not ready to hear that King James was a whole bisexual. They're not ready for this conversation. They're just not. They're not ready for all of the actual truth and the roots and the origins and etymology of Leviticus and who that was for. They're not ready for those conversations because since they were 5 and 6 years old, they've been taught this and this is what the Bible says and you got to end it. So unless a person has, what do they call it in therapy? A breakthrough or a traumatic event that triggers, wait a minute, what the fuck is this? And for me, I'm sorry, am I allowed to swear? I'm sorry. And for me, that series of events took place, as it did for many people, I'm sure, in 2015, 2016, when we saw Trump entering into the White House, followed by all of these evangelicals. I said, excuse me. Now, I know these church folks have always been historically conservative and Republican since Nixon and Pat Buchanan. I get all of that. I know the history of the politics. I understand that. But wait a minute. This guy is not the guy. He doesn't even pretend. And that for me was the beginning of me deconstructing my faith. Because now everything that I had believed about these people who I was told were my brothers and sisters in Christ, now it's being turned upside down.
Yeah. I just keep picturing you like saying the Jenga of it all and like having one block pulled and the rest is about to crumble. And it's like it's also even just outside of queerness, just like other beliefs that folks hold around pretty much everything.
Everything,
Everything.
everything. Capitalism, poverty, immigration, literally everything.
Everything. And it's a lot to just like to your point, you have to really want it. You have to, there has to be some kind of moment. And I just feel so, I don't know how to emote this to you, but like glad, happy that your mom like had that moment of like, I'm gonna start to question everything and start to pull this Jenga block because my son is more important to me than this tower looking a certain way.
That is the thing. I came out of her. This is just the motherly sort of vibration. And not all women have that maternal instinct, but my mother happens to have it. She loves all of her children. I'm the baby of her older age. She was 33 when she had me. She had all of her previous children by the time she was 26, 27. So I came a little later, and there were all kinds of complications. There was just so many things going on. So I'm kind of like the miracle baby. I fought to get here. And she knew that she already knew that there was never going to be any less love. She just couldn't figure out how she was going to reconcile where I was versus who she thought I was. And that was on me, because for so many decades, I was trying to present something else, because I had been convinced that, as a Christian, that, well, being a Christian, being queer, or being homosexual, or bisexual, whatever it is wrong. It's a sin. You're going to hell. I didn't want to go to hell. I didn't want to die. I didn't want to get the AIDS. All that stuff. And I've just finally got to a place. And I think the one of the things that I appreciate about my journey is coming out later in life. Because had I, and but I also wish, I'm so insanely, beautifully jealous of any teenager that I have ever heard about saying, "Well, I came out when I was 15." You did what?
I
I came out when I was 15 years old, and my father gave me a black eye, and my mama threw me out the house, and I lived on the streets. Yeah, I said, "You did what?" Because I could never. I could never. I mean, but I'm jealous because I'm like, just how brave. Because people have said to me since I've come out, "Eric, I think it's very brave what you're doing." I said, "It's not brave at 50," and I'm not trying to diminish anybody else's path. I'm talking specifically about my own. Said, "It's not brave at 50 because I have less to lose. I've already done so many major things in my career. I'm not afraid of losing my career. I'm not afraid of losing friends and family. It's brave when you have everything to lose." But I get what they're saying when they say brave, just the idea that still in 2025, it's problematic for a lot of people. And when I finally began to be 100% open and authentic when I hit 50 in 2020 during a whole pandemic, there were other things to be concerned about. And it was safer to be open, to be openly queer. It was safer. And here I am in 2025, and I'm like, "Oh my God, we're going backwards. Wait, I just came out. You're trying to tell me now I gotta go back." I said, "I'm not going back. It's too late. You can't outring a bell." But these young people who told me they came out at 15 and 20 and at 30, oh my God, I would have longed to have had that kind of courage. But I was too blinded by and inundated with evangelical Christianity. Coming out was just not an option. Not in the circles I was moving in.
I mean, I resonate so much with you just thinking about these kids 15 and younger being like, this is who I am. I came out as gay when I was 20 and trans when I was 29, and I'm 40 now, and I still have the same kind of feeling as you, as like, I wish I could have come out earlier, and how do you do it? And also to your point, there's no world where I'm gonna go back in the closet. Like, I
Can't do it.
just not happening. I fought
No.
way too hard to get to where I am right now to
All of that.
ever go back.
All of that. Not after all, and I'm fighting back tears. Not after all we've experienced. Not after all of the water under the bridge. Not after all the conversations, the painful conversations we've had to have with our friends and loved ones. In any scenario, am I going back to that. I'm too happy and free. I've got a whole partner, for Christ's sake. We've been together for 2.5 years. And all the shit we went through to get here. And then having to say to my parents, to my mom — my dad died in 2002. To my mom and my siblings and my nieces and nephews. And I've got family members who have young children who, you know, they have their concerns. I was like, listen, I'm bringing my partner home for Christmas. You know, I'm not trying to throw them in your face. I felt as though I gave my family — keep saying parents. I guess I wish my parents were still together here alive, my father. I gave my family a lot of leeway and forewarning and education and telling them about, you know, I said, this is where my life is now. And by the way, I now have a partner, and I'd like to bring him to Christmas dinner because he's become a part of my family, and I want you all to meet him, and I want him all to meet you. There was no pushback. There was no pushback. But I did say to one of my family members who has a young child, I said, what have you told your child about your gunkle, your Uncle Eric and his partner? And that family member responded, Uncle Eric is bringing his special friend. And, you know, for me, that was enough. That was fair, because when it comes to children, we all have to step lightly. We all have to be mindful of what children understand, what they're being told by the world, what other children talk about, and the ways we talk about very adult topics, very mature topics. And we have to present them to children in ways that we can that they can understand based on their life experience. So if their life experience is 12 years, it's going to be somewhat limited. So I wanted to just be respectful of my family member and their child and say, hey, listen, you know, what did you say? Okay. And it's been great. And we've all spent — they've all had their different relationships with my partner. They love him. He loves them back. He treats them like family, and they're very respectful of me. And in all honesty, I'm sure there are some, you know, one-on-one conversations or some group chats that I might not be in where some concerns are being expressed. Well, I don't know how I feel about this, or I wish this, or I wish that. And again, I get it. And I offer grace because they've known one version of me for 40 years. And now this is a different version that they have to go, all right, so this is where we are now.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying, you're showing a lot of patience and grace with the folks in your life. And I think it's, you know, I do a lot of educating and workshops and all this stuff around LGBTQ inclusion, and
sure,
have workshops with parents, and, you know, all the stuff. And
that's awesome.
Thank you. But what, you know, and I've been doing this work for a long time, and I think a lot of folks really just want a pretty packaged, like, one size fits all answer for all of the things.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work that way, because it's like all about context. It's about relationship. It's about trust.
Yes.
And, you know, all of those ingredients mixed together, you know, will then ask for a different kind of response or a different kind of conversation that has to happen. And so, again, back to what we were saying earlier around the navigating of, like, figuring out, like, okay, it's okay if you call me a special friend, and what's happening here, and, you know, I mean, my partner, special friend, and that, you know, that kind of thing. And, and then, you know, just like a lot of, I would imagine, cause I know for me, at least, some concessions when it comes to, you know, I would really like, there are some things where I'm like, I have a hard boundary, like you have to use my pronouns, you have to use my name. Not going to concede on those, but like some other things of like if I just like relax a little bit on like people saying you guys or like nieces and nephews instead of niblet, you know, like all that, like there's like walking the fine line. But I'm just thinking as we're both talking, just how, I don't know, I guess I think beautiful might be the word that we even can have these conversations with the people who be, you know, in our lives, and that they're not, they haven't written us off, and they haven't, you know, as you said earlier, like kicked us out of the house or, you know, and so there's, and there's also, there's always an and, there's nothing wrong with wanting more, with wanting, you know, your partner to feel respected, and it's like this is my partner, not my special friend. And for a 12-year-old, that is, I think, an age where they've been exposed to enough, you know, because really, it's not like you're talking about your sex life to anybody. This is just a relationship, just like mom and dad are in a relationship, me and my partner. You know, it's like, so it's like that nuance too. It's not like I'm going to be talking all about prep to these kids. It's
That's
like,
right.
this is just my partner home for Christmas with me. And so there's
100%.
like a lot of that too, of like negotiating and, you know, picking our battles and that kind of thing too.
100%, Dubs. I mean, and I love all of that. So much of that resonates with me because the issue that we're fighting, or one of the very many issues, I think one of the main, one of the paramount issues, is the idea of constructs. This is what ruins all of us, because for so long we have lived under the construct of two genders, no more, male, female, marriage is between a man and a woman. And the idea, the very idea that one would get together with another one and then construct a series of laws that limit relationships and existences and marriages to this and this and no more. That is so, to me, that is one of the most inhumane things you can do, to say that we all have to live under this very Puritan existence and the entire world should live as such. And we don't give a shit about ancient cultures and existences and two-spirit. It's like, and you know, again, if that's just something that has been beaten into you from the time you're a child, then you just grow up in that. And that becomes your understanding and your lifestyle and your experience, versus a genuinely human experience where we can all just appreciate who we are just for existing. And I'm going to say this carefully, and please hear me how I say it. I don't care what your pronouns are with regard to how I'm going to treat you as a human being. If you tell me these are your pronouns, then I will respect that and I will say, okay, these are your pronouns. Now, I'll be perfectly honest. It took me a second to get used to pronouns, because before I began to embrace my sexuality, my niece had friends in high school, so she's Gen Z. Younger, I call her a younger millennial elder alpha, but she's really a younger millennial. She's born 1996. Is that?
I don't know. I'll
Yeah,
take
so
your word for it.
these social cohorts, they have their place. But she had a friend, has a friend named Caleb. And it was so confusing for me, because again, I'm Gen X, so we grew up with things. This is what you believe. And she was explaining to me, Caleb is biologically male, cisgender male, cis male, but identifies as female. But her name is Caleb. So I said, wait, what? Hold on. What's happening here? He's got a whole beard and a mustache. Help me understand, because I wasn't trying hard enough, But because I loved my niece and I wanted my niece's respect, I said, let me just put forth the effort. And she would very casually and very politely correct me whenever I unintentionally misgendered Caleb, because they knew. And this is the thing, going to the point about having to educate people. A lot of this is new in terms of terminology. The existence of it has been around since time immemorial. But the words, the wording, the labels, the education, the terminologies, that's newer to folks who are not inside of the queer community. So I can point to any random person who's like 80 or 90 years old right now, and the idea of a two-spirit existence, or the term niblets, that's a term I just heard for the first time 5 minutes ago. So much of this is new, and it's important for us in the queer community to stay mindful of this, that we need to understand what war we're fighting here. And when we educate, we have to educate often, far too often, from a place of, like you said, patience and a place of grace. Because some people aren't going to get it, don't want to get it, but some people are trying to get it. And these are the folks that we can bring into allyship in the context of racism. What black people have been called in this country has changed several times. We've gone from black to Negro to colored to Afro-American to black American to African American. So I don't give white folks a whole lot of shit when it comes to whether or not it's black or African American. It's when you use the word colored that we got a problem. I said, now listen, wait a minute. Now, come on now. You're old enough to know better. But I'm very mindful of who I'm talking to and what it's like talking to someone who grapples with what they've been taught versus what the world really could look like in its fullness and in its beauty. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little, maybe I'm a little too gracious. I don't know.
No, I mean, I think, well, here's what I think. I think a lot of things, but I think that we need some of us in this fight who are gracious and patient. And then there are some people who, don't have the luxury of patience and grace.
Very true.
And we need all of us to move things forward. And to your point too, around there are, at least for me, and I'm curious for you, in the last X number of years of being out navigating the world, I've like honed the skills of like being able to tell like if someone's genuinely trying and making a mistake versus someone who just doesn't want to try, and I'm gonna have way more patience for the person who's trying than I am otherwise. But I think also to your point around language, yeah, the words are newer, but the existence of us as, all different kinds of people have existed forever. And excuse me, and I think that we're in a moment, well, maybe like before Trump taking office again, like when the last 5 years or so, 4 years, it felt like we were really making some progress, despite still like the anti-LGBTQ and anti-trans bills. Those were still there. But we were making a lot of progress. And in that progress, I think there are a lot of folks, myself included, who were getting caught up in like a white supremacist idea of perfection, of like, you have to get this right. This is so important. And in that, in those conversations over and over, I started seeing the people who were trying to show up shut down because it was like, I can't do anything right. And so there was a lot of like adjusting that had to happen on my end, on their end. And then I know this happened, this is for, more broadly for folks as well, of and you said this earlier too, of like, what is the actual battle we're fighting? Like, and like, let's focus on that instead of like, listen, like, words are really important, and the words that we use for ourselves and how people refer to us, that it's important. No one's saying otherwise. And again, like just thinking about things in context. And it's like, is this the exact battle I want to be having, or do I want to save this for something much more pressing, or whatever? And it's complicated, because you might ask me in a week, and I might tell you something totally different of like how I feel about it. So, but I think there's just like this idea of like, if we could all just maybe like zoom out a little bit and not get so caught up, all of us, about a lot of things, caught up around the very specifics, and more just like the humanity of it. It's like, these structures that were built, these, racist, capitalist, like white supremacist, like just are hurting everybody, all the people. And so what can we do as community members? But then it's like, when I think about this too much, it's like, there's so much work to do. Like,
Yes, but I'm here, but Dubs, I'm here for it. I'm here for the work. I'm okay with that because I spent so many years working on trying to diminish and change and squeeze in. I said, "You know what? I'm free now. I'm here for the fight. I'm here for the fight." But one of the things that was a turning point for me was the October 2023 attacks by Hamas. And that's sort of like still in that window between Trump's first term in office, then COVID, George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, then the Hamas attack, and then Trump, the redux, That opened up another whole can of worms on the heels of Black Lives Matter and George Floyd and COVID. Because now it was completely, again, you're playing Jenga with the whole idea of America and its allyship with Israel. And for decades, since 1948 and the establishment of Israel as an independent nation, they have the idea is that we support Israel, we support Israel, we support Israel. End of story. It's a wrap. Don't question it. We support Israel. End of story. Unfettered support of Israel. But October 2023 blew all of that apart. Excuse my pun. That was in bad taste. Tore all of that apart. Because now you say, wait a minute, though. What about these Palestinians? What Hamas did was wrong. We can, two things can be true. Oh, okay, we acknowledge that. That was awful. But wait a minute. We're seeing some things we hadn't seen before. Who is AIPAC? AIPAC, what do they do? I had never heard of AIPAC prior to October 2023. I didn't know who the hell they were. So now here I am going down this rabbit hole of the that whole dynamic of Israel's independence and Arabs being on the land and people not recognizing Israel, people not recognizing Palestine. I'm like, oh my God, this is a nightmare. Now and here I am. I'm fresh, not freshly, but newly out of the closet, and I'm ready to just make life about me. I'm ready to be a narcissist about me. I said, because it's my world. The world revolves around me and my big old queer self. And so now I find myself having to take on this other, because I was really feeling myself. I said, okay, I'm out. I've got a partner. Well, I'm going to just talk shit now. Oh, this is some bullshit. That's some bullshit. So now I'm like, this social media activist. I'm posting, posting, post, 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 post. And I had kind of lost myself in activism, in the same way I had lost myself in Christianity, in the same way I had lost myself in my career as a jazz musician. I had no personality. I said, now here I am making my queerness a whole personality, which is not really different from the other stuff. Now it's turned into a negative thing. And it's like, wait a minute, I just need to just be myself and not identify myself through my queerness versus making queerness just a part of who I am and how I identify. It's like you were saying, you kind of had to take a pause and step back from, you know, people were coming in and they were shutting down. So it was the same thing for me. I had to step back because then, now there was all this anti-Kamala Harris talk. I said, wait a minute, this isn't how it was supposed to go. And then, of course, we wound up with Trump again. And so I'm in a very weird place, like with my partner, as we said in the very beginning, becoming full circle of we have bigger fish to fry. Mm-hmm. Because now our independent lifestyles, our independent livelihoods, our existence, we need to spend more time focusing on this, on just our daily survival, than we do these causes that are not exactly tangential. They do impact us overall. We do have to be diligent and aware because this is the same issue that so many of these Trumpers fell into. You were talking about how white supremacy and racism hurts all of us. All of us also means racists. And these racists, as you know, they're finding out you voted against your best interests, farmers, Latinos for Trump. You know, you voted against your best interests, and now you're discovering that this harms you too. And they were thinking, but we voted for him because we thought it would only affect everybody else. We didn't know it affect us. We didn't mean to fuck around and find out. Yes, that's what's going on, you idiots. it literally hurts all of us. It's very expensive. The problem is, until racism and sexism and homophobia cease to be profitable, capitalism, we're not going to see a change. And we're seeing, listen, America's toast.
Oh, jeez.
It just is. It's toast. And I'm not trying to be all, you know, dark and fatal. America's toast. It's never going to go back to the way it was. We're going to see nothing but just more craziness in the future. And we just have to just brace ourselves for it and get ready. Like I said, I'm here for it. I personally feel it's a wonderful time to be alive and to be a part of history. It's scary as shit. Don't get me wrong. I am under no illusions about so many of us. I've talked to a friend of mine who has a trans child, and they're concerned about their ability to have access to, correct me if I'm wrong, it's called gender-affirming care. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Gender-affirming care. And this is that's not a fear for me, but it's a fear for someone, you know, I know. So I'm going to be concerned. I'm going to have to listen. Well, you know what? I have concern and I sympathize with you, even though that particular situation doesn't affect me directly. Mm-hmm. It's all looped in together. Again, it's going back to that Jenga game. It's all looped in together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of it is so interconnected.
Yeah.
And I keep seeing this. I guess it's a tweet or something, not a tweet. I'm not on Twitter, but like something that's like, you know, my kid never needed like breakfast at school, so I'm not going to vote for it. It's like, just because your kid didn't need it doesn't mean all these other millions of kids don't need it.
They could care less.
Yeah, it's rough out there and all the different, you know, issues and things that we could, you know, spend our whole lives, you know, fighting and educating. And as a Jewish person, I, you know, October 7th hit me in a particular way and really saw my community split, because we have the folks who are, you know, pro Israel, nothing they do is strong. And then we have the folks who are, far on the other side of the spectrum. Then we have folks in the middle, and we have folks who are like, can I just care about all the people and not want anyone to be starved or murdered or held hostage? Or, it's complicated. It's
It truly
tricky.
is. It tr well. The situation is complicated.
Yeah.
But when we think, like you said, that person that says, why can't we all just not kill each other? That part is simple.
Yeah, that's not
That
complicated.
that's not complicated at all. And the problem is when you want to invalidate someone else's existence. And that's, again, not just a regional thing. That's with paying women fairly and treating people, giving using people's pronouns and not being racist. It's literally all tied in together. And I look at, sometimes it's every now and again, I think to myself, oh God, I should have just stayed in the closet. Because it's just, life was there was an illusion of comfort that I had and not being authentically myself in my sexuality. But the idea of coming out later in life and why I even made this latest recording project, which I call Out Late, it all ties in a very comfortable way for me, but I feel a little awkward again, because this was my intention 2 years ago, was to center myself and my existence and my authenticity so that I could celebrate me. And so, with all that's going on in the world, sometimes it feels a little weird that I have this album release. It's called Out Late, and I'm celebrating my sexuality. And sometimes there's this other voice in my head that's going, man, we got a fucking maniac in the White House. I don't give a shit about your sexuality and the fact that you just get out of here with that. And I have to stop doing that. I have to stop. Again, it's me diminishing myself and invalidating my existence and my experience. No. I am important. You are important. You and how you navigate the world, it matters. It matters. And I said, no, I'm gonna absolutely celebrate myself and speak up against injustice.
For sure. And I'm thinking about, and I definitely want to talk about your album before we end the interview. But I too go back and forth around that, like, no one cares about whatever it might be. I should be focusing on the bigger issues, but it's just not what it is,
No.
because there are still so many people who are in the closet, who don't know it's safe to come out,
Yeah.
who need us, who need our stories, our voices, to see us thriving, to see us
Yes.
experiencing joy.
Yes.
The refrain that I have, that I have going on all the time in my meditation every day is like, to thrive is the like resistance. Because all this government wants us to do is to disappear. They're
That's
trying to
right.
disappear us.
That's right.
And the more we don't disappear, and the more we thrive and are feeling joy and inviting others to feel joy,
Yes.
that's how we win.
I love that. 100%. I love
And yeah, so tell your voice to come talk to my voice, and
it.
I'll remind your voice that we gotta thrive.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for that.
Yeah, of course. And I so okay, so your album is called Out Late, and
Yes.
I love it. I got
Thank
a
you.
sneak peek.
Thank you.
And I so when your publicist PR person reached out to interview you, I started listening just to all of your music, and I like haven't stopped listening. I emailed April, and I was like, I can't stop listening to Eric's
How
albums.
awesome. Oh, how
So
awesome. Thank you.
yeah, it just is feels good in my soul. I don't know how else to like describe it.
That works.
That yeah, right. And so Is the title out late is a reference to you coming out later in life, and is it also it's an entendre for like nightlife in New York City? Did I get that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got that right. That's totally it. There was no super, deeper meaning than that.
Okay. Well, I love that. And
Thank you.
also I got some tickets to come see your when you're in New York.
Oh,
So
wonderful.
I'm excited for that. So I'll
Oh,
post when
great.
you'll be here
Awesome.
or
And you'll
in
get
New
to meet my
York.
partner.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah,
Awesome.
he's
I
hanging
can't
out.
wait.
Yeah.
So how did the idea for Out Late come to you? And you're like, because you go from you're talking about I want this all to be about me to I don't want it to be about me, and now you have an album about coming out late. So tell me a little bit about that journey.
Well, it's the music, and it's also the nightlife of jazz and all that kind of stuff. But it's also my musical approach. My writing has also there's been a transition in the way I approach music, in the way I play it, in the way I write it. And this album for me is such a landmark moment in terms of how I express myself, because I recognize now the connection of my earlier music when I was younger was very symmetrical. It was very arranged, and I had it down to the second how long each solo was going to be, and I want this edit here and I want this edit there. Very controlled, because I was trying to control a narrative, right? So anybody that was paying attention would have seen right through that. But now this music represents a much more open, truly authentic, organic me. I'm loose. I flow. I color outside the lines. I don't care if we dropped a beat. I don't care if you played a wrong note. We're playing music, and this is what life is. Life and progress are not linear. We move and we flow and we ebb and we fall and we get back up and we run and we crawl and we walk. And this is what I wanted this album to represent, to express to people that this is not a perfect Eric Scott Reid album. You're used to hearing no mistakes, perfect edits. You're used to hearing these things. And now, but this is just a much more looser, open version of me. And it's, again, things that have manifested for me later in life. This openness about my sexuality, this openness about my life, this openness with my music, how I collaborate with other musicians, and the fact that a lot of it takes place after dark. It used to be a lot later. Jazz clubs are starting now at 6:30 and 7 o'clock. But back in the 1990s, the first set would start at 9, and now, child, I can't even imagine going out at 10 o'clock to go hear music. I'm into bed by 10,
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I mean I love the mirroring of just kind of like where you are in life and how that is like manifesting in the music. And I wish for everyone, I wish for everyone to be able to come into their authentic self whenever it's right
Yes.
for them
Yes. And
because
safe,
of
right and safe.
right and safe. Exactly. Those are the two big ones. Because when we are able to come out, we like the alignment and the ability to be more free in the things that that are in our lives is just it's so significant. So I'm really excited to see this to see you play live.
Thank you.
It's going to be a beautiful New York moment, I
Thank you
think,
so
for me.
much. I appreciate that. And I'm playing with musicians who are all, what's the word? Confirmed straight guys. They're straight, And I wondered, how musicians would respond to me. I hadn't seen a lot of these guys since I had come out. I was in Tennessee, of all places. So I was concerned about coming back to New York for the first time since, how I was going to be received on the scene. Were some of these cats going to be, kind of distant? And Not one of them treated me any differently than they ever had when I was trying to be straight presenting. You know, I think again, because it happened later in life, people get to a place where they're like, you know what, man, I'm not concerned about what you do. I'm trying to pay this alimony. You know, everybody's got,
Everyone has their own stuff.
everybody has their own shit. So at 50 years old, you know, it's sometimes again, trying not to diminish myself. I kind of feel like the bride that wears white at her third wedding. It's like, come on, girl. It's like, first of all, why are you having this big ass wedding and it's your third and you, bitch, you're wearing white? Come on now. But so it's like, you know, at 50, like I said, I really wish one of my big regrets, and I've got many of them, was not doing so many of these things when I was younger. But the universe, you know, things work out the way they need to. I don't know what that situation might have been like in my 20s, and if I could have handled coming out at 22, I might have taken myself out of here at the possibility of losing family members, of going no contact, being kicked out of, you know, playing at these churches and being shunned by these folks. I might not have been able to handle it.
I really also just want to reaffirm what you're saying of like the timing is so important and not being able to handle certain. I'm just thinking back of like coming out as trans. Like I came out when I came out because that's when I could. That's when I was able to. And as much as I can regret not coming out earlier, I don't know that it wouldn't have ended well. I don't think
I got you. I
so.
feel you. I feel you on that.
Yeah. I wish we could keep talking. There's so
I
much more to
know.
unpack.
I know.
But I want to bring us into our lightning round of questions. They're meant to be for fun. Answer as quickly as you can. You can say pass. They are open-ended, so it makes it a little bit harder to answer, but only because I was called in that my questions were too binary. So, all right. Where is your favorite place to think?
In my practice studio.
Who is an influential queer person in your life?
I can't say their names because they're not out.
Great. That's fair. What is a song that you can listen to on repeat forever?
So What by Miles Davis.
What's one thing you want to be known for?
Loving people.
What does identity euphoria feel like to you?
Orgasmic.
Nice. Where do you find joy?
In the presence of any other human being.
That's nice.
I love people. I really do.
Me too. All right. Last but not least, bagels or donuts?
Bagels.
You know, there are no right or wrong answers, but that is the
Especially since I only eat donuts maybe two or three times a year, because it's just fried sugar for crying out loud. But a
answer.
good bagel, like an everything bagel with a schmear, come on. Come on.
I mean, do you have a go-to place when you come to New York?
Joe's Bagels. So they're up on the upper west side, 79th in Amsterdam. I think they're called Joe's Bagels. I have to look them up. But I mean, it's New
Amazing.
York. You're gonna find a good bagel pretty much on every other corner.
It's true. Eric, thank you so much for joining me, for sharing. Thank you for coming out.
Thank you, Dubs. I appreciate you for bringing me out.
Thank you for coming out.